The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, and boy, oh boy, thank God football is back, folks, because ESPN is showing right now the Savannah Bananas on their main channel, and then on ESPN2, we've got an archery competition where they're actually shooting at each other.
Yeah, but it's not sharp bows or arrows. They're dull. It's like round. It's a weird thing.
USA leading Canada right now, 34-30. Archery tag.
Archery tag. But like no one gets it. I don't know. We can talk about something else.
Like I said, thank goodness football is back because they are running out of stuff to show here. We kind of joke back and forth. It's like, well, on Apple TV tonight, you got the Red baseball. Sox and Astros playing. Well, what's going on, ESPN? I mean, the MLB deal. You would think they'd be showing any baseball right now, but no, we got archery and Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, I'm sure Apple TV paid good money to show this baseball game. So,
getting into more of our Saints conversation, training camp in full swing for the Black and Gold. We've got three more sessions until they head out to California. They'll be on the West Coast for a bit leading up to their preseason game against the LA Chargers and then even stay a couple of days after that before getting back in the mix here in Metairie. I'm not sure these going to be the final open sessions of camp on Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, or do when they come back home finally from California, are fans also going to be out of practice? I'm not sure.
I believe that these are the – I don't know if they have any scheduled open practices. I'd have to double check. I'd be surprised if they don't do like a Superdome practice or even a Tulane practice again, something like that. But yeah, I think that the goal was to get these open practices not out of the way, but really front loaded because you had 10 of them in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and luckily for the fans as well, the rain hasn't played a part in canceling any sessions. That's always a disappointment.
Yeah, just that 1 5-minute period where Blake was trying to kick and it was a downpour. That's the only rain we've gotten.
Yeah, it's been very, very light mist that we got to come down.
Yeah, yeah.
But
is this the weather hours, Steve? What are we doing here?
Well, that's a big part of camp because I feel like it's the sun's like out to hurt us on some days. And we've had a few where the cloud cover has been blissful, hoping that's the case tomorrow at least and Sunday because I got spoiled on yesterday's session for sure being inside.
Yeah, they did move back tomorrow's practice to 10:15, so it's going to be a later start. We'll see how that goes. It is what it is. I think they're very happy to use the heat as an extra tool to work, right? Like Kellen's made a point of that, you know, but they're also being cognizant of when they need to go inside and kind of take that load off. And we saw on Thursday. We saw yesterday.
I know, hard to keep up.
When they went inside, the energy level just skyrocketed. Just because you're not, you know, like when you're out there in the sun, it's survival to an extent. And I do think there is a level to that where you're trying so hard just to get through practice that you might not be getting the peak level of work in that maybe you wanted. So I do think that it is smart to have some indoor practices to kind of cut through that.
A person that is back with the Saints after spending some time away from New Orleans. Also a local guy, went to Brother Martin, LSU. Will Clapp, an offensive lineman, has been taking a lot of snaps, mainly at center here at training camp. We haven't seen him at the guard spot at all.
No, he's been the center. His primary position is center right now, and that was the case when he was with Kellen in L.A. as well.
Yeah, like you mentioned, there's that familiarity with Kellen Moore when they were playing both were with the Chargers at the time. But, Will Clapp definitely seemed happy to be back home. He mentioned, you know, get to see his kids every night. Imagine when he was playing out in California that I guess the family stays here, back home?
Yeah, I think they set up shop in Metairie, but they were out there in California with him. I'd have to go back and listen to exactly what he said. But no, he's happy to be back. And you can, you know, he's very mature. He's a much more mature guy now than maybe when he left. And that's not unusual. Like you see guys go to different spots in the NFL and they kind of really gain a level of just kind of gravitas to them because they just understand.
Well, plus it's year 8 for them.
Well, right. And then you kind of learn the system. You learn what happens. You know what it's like to be a free agent, to go from team to team. And it's he's glad to be back. But the Saints did re-sign Shane Lemieux. I say re-sign. They brought him in for a tryout earlier in camp. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's some competition for that backup center spot, because I think they are getting a little irked by some of the bad snaps.
This is WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. We're talking about Will Clapp. He had some glowing reviews about Taliese Fuaga and the rookie Kelvin Banks Jr., comparing them to Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead. Let's hear from Will Clapp.
Man, those guys, it's actually kind of scary, like the comparison, because it's very real. Tali is like by far one of the most naturally talented O-linemen I've ever been around. This dude, just like he does things that like you don't even have to coach. Like he's literally just doing it like naturally. And then KB, like I said, I mean the set and the way he moves around on the field reminds me a lot of Ram. His recovery ability, like Ram was when he was younger. I think these two guys are on the trajectory of, you know, having those types of, you know, booking careers where these guys are like, you know, organization staples, you know, at the edges.
JN, what do you think about that?
What?
He said KB, so I was just calling you JN.
It was like, wait, hold on.
Really, really great stuff you hear about Taliese Fuaga, a guy that's going into year two in the NFL.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of positive things to be said about those two guys. And, you know, Will's comparison, and he was asked to make that comparison. It wasn't necessarily he just brought it out, but he was more than willing to assess
expand
it
on it, yeah,
because he's, you know, and he saw that firsthand. Like he played with Teron and Ryan, and then he left and came back, and then the duo is Tali and Kelvin. And you know, he wasn't here when Teron and Ryan were rookies and second year players, but he did see what that pairing looked like when it was at its best, you know. And so I mean, that's a good thing to hear. And you kind of got to gas up some young players, but you see it out there. Like my concern level should be a lot higher for a rookie left tackle, but
right.
What I've seen out there is just, you know, he's just solid. Like there was back-to-back reps yesterday where he was kind of on an island against Brian Brzee. Brian threw a spin move at him. Brian has a really good spin move. He just kind of stonewalled it, like calmly. Like it didn't look like a rookie like seeing something for the first time. He was just kind of there. He knew where to go. He knew where to put his leverage, and he took care of it. And then the next rep, it was Chase Young. You know, I think one thing that young players, when you can, you say like, okay, where does he need to develop? It's understanding you don't have to win every rep, but you have to understand how you can lose a rep. And, you know, the best tackles in the NFL understand how to ride a guy out of a play. You know, like he might be getting around you, but he's not getting around you until he's way too far past the quarterback to actually impact that play. And that's what you kind of saw. And I just think he came into the league with a much higher level of technical discipline than you're typically going to see. And that's why you're a top 10 pick, right?
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, you thought there'd be some kind of concern with a rookie left tackle. We're also on the left side of that offensive line, getting a new guard with Trevor Penning learning the position. And Will Clapp compared Penning to being a bully. Well, let's hear what Clapp had to say more on that.
What makes him Trevor Penning? Like, what are the thing, like the one or two things that are different about him than most guys playing that spot?
Yeah, he's just such a, I think that if you were describing like one word, is like physical. I mean, every play he's literally trying to put people on the ground. And like you like to have that mindset at, like every play as an offensive lineman, but like a lot of guys don't. And like this dude truly wants to like physically destroy people. He is a phone booth player. I know that's been like a term used about him. And I think it's just exciting. I think he's taking this position change really well, and I think it suits him to his abilities. And I'm excited to see like him just continue to. I mean, every day he's stacking days right now, and it's exciting to see. I mean, I know the coaches are excited, and you know he's really turning a corner there.
Yeah, your guy started at tackle and then moved inside. You know, what are some of the challenges that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, his whole career, you know, first 3 years, he was out on the edge, and it's a different pace out there. There's more space. It's a different timing inside. I mean, these guys are right on you. I mean, you better get 2 feet in the ground, and you better throw a haymaker and land one with first significant touch. And he's figuring that one out. Yeah, he would probably say his first couple of days, you know, the timing in OTAs was different for him. And yeah, it, like I said, it just takes a little bit of time. But he's a very smart and talented player, and I have no doubts that he'll figure it out and become a high-level player at guard.
Will Klopp there breaking down the play of Trevor Penning. And we've talked about this before, Jeff, the fact that, you know, Penning came into this whole situation welcoming the change. He's looking forward to moving on to a position, hopefully, that better suits him at the NFL level here at guard. So far, the early returns have been positive. I know he's still getting adjusted to things, and you know, we'll pick back up tomorrow's session, Saturday and Sunday, and back-to-back more padded practices to get more of a feel of Penning at that guard slot.
Yeah, and you know, the way Will described it is he's a phone booth player, which it's kind of, I'd never actually heard that said before, but it's like you can kind of visualize what that means. And it's like there's not nearly as much space inside. And we're going to hear the same thing from Brendan Nugent. We talk when you hear from him later in the hour. And it's like this, when you shrink that space, it makes it so he can get his hands on people, and he can get his hands on people quickly, and you don't have to worry about playing in space nearly as much. And it just allows his physicality to shine. And, you know, when you can get that guy in a phone booth with you, he can't get away from you. So you can physically dominate that player. And that's what that means, right? Like, you can understand when watching Trevor and watching him every rep trying to finish people off, why that's a positive thing and why that should bode well for this group, particularly in the run game. I still have some questions about pass protection and how he's going to handle some stunts. You know, it gets a little confusing when you're on the inside and you got to figure out who's picking up who. But in the run game, I think he's really going to make a difference.
Are we going to see this first team O-line in the preseason? Maybe most of the guys, not all of them.
I think if the first team quarterback is in there, the first team O-line is going to be in there. And
but who's the first team quarterback?
You're going to start with Spence. I think you do need to get these guys reps. Maybe you put McCoy down,
right?
And you play
the
rest of them.
Maybe gets a rest.
Or Ruiz too. Yeah. But like, if you have your quarterback who you think is the starter at that point, like whether you've made the decision or not, like you got to have your first team O-line in there. You're not going to give him the Mark Sanchez treatment.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back with more of our Saints training camp coverage. Stay tuned after the break here on WWL.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, our WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. Want to get into our interview? Jeff sat down with offensive line coach Brendan Nugent from the Saints at training camp. Here's what Brendan had to say about this O-line going into the 2025 season.
When you're joining a group like this, and you know, a guy like Trevor who's had three offensive line coaches in 3 years, how do you approach kind of setting your standard with that group? And because there's language, everyone brings in their own mission statements, and how do you make that your room with that big of a group?
Well, the biggest thing is the best O-line rooms I've been a part of, it's been their room. Those are the best ones, right? And it's, you know, me, you know, my job in this, in when you have a good room like we have, because we have a very good room, it's kind of just steering them and guiding them where we need to go, right? Like, we can have a standard as coaches for them, and we can try and hold it to them, but the best groups I've been around, the room holds everybody accountable to that standard. So you kind of come in, we set the standard, this is what we expect, we talk about easy wins, things like that are every day, that, hey, like TNT takes no talent, right? These are things we can do every day that take no talent, right? And those are easy wins, and then everybody just holds each other to that standard, and then the room, somebody's dragging, I don't have to do much if it's a good room. They're bringing them along as we go. So that's kind of what we've been trying to instill since we got here, is like, hey man, like, this is ours together, right? It's not my room, it's not Eric's room, it's not Caesar's room, it's not Tyler's room. Like, this is our room, right, together, right? The better you play, I always joke about it, it's like we're coworkers, right? Like, the better you play, the longer your career is. The better you play, I keep my job. So let's figure this out together, right, and be the best we can be. So it's kind of a group effort, but really it's like those guys, we set the standard, they understand it, right? And then the leaders just make sure everybody comes along with it.
Yeah, and Eric, obviously, he was here when you were here before, right? Yeah. So, I mean, what have you seen, like, from when you left to when you came back in terms of the leadership with him?
You know, when I left, you know, we still had Teron, we still had Ryan Ramczyk, we still had kind of like those older guys, and Eric was leading in his own way, but those guys kind of had a big presence as to how that room went, and it was a good thing, right? And then, you know, just from afar, you know, the past 3 years that I've been gone, I've seen his play get better and better and better and better, which I knew it would when I left. And then just coming here and seeing how he's not only leading that group, but leading the offense, right? It's been really good. He's kind of taken that role, and he's not the most vocal guy, but you can count on that guy doing everything 1,000% every day, doing it right, holding himself to the same stand, accountable, just like he holds everybody else, which is one of the, you know, greatest characteristics of a leader.
What's an example of TNT?
All right, so it takes no talent, right? I don't know if you hear me out there. Follow the ball, chase the ball, right? Like, you never know, right? We're running, right? We call those easy wins, right? Breaking the huddle with a purpose, getting the line of scrimmage. We're not sprinting, but we're not walking, right? We're getting up there, we're getting set, we're making our calls, right? Those things, right? Hey, the ball's strong, follow the ball, right? Push the pile if the ball carrier's still up and in a pile. Like, all those things, just those are like, that takes no talent. Anybody can do those things, right? Anybody. Not everybody can block that five technique or that three technique, but when that ball gets through there, everybody can hustle down and chase the ball. Everybody can chase after the ball when it's thrown. Everybody can go run and push the pile. So that's like, it takes no talent, right? Those are the easy wins, we call, because it's easy to do, right? And if we're doing those things, it brings everybody else along. And that's the standard we're trying to set with how we play. We're trying to do it every play in practice so that it just, in the game, it's like one of those things, you do it over and over and again, you don't even think about it, you're just chasing after the ball, right? You're just covering down after a pass, so.
You know, one thing we've seen throughout to this point in camp is like false starts. Player comes off field. We saw that with Trevor in the situation with Bill today. How do you think that helps a player when, you know, obviously you kind of have to come out and sit with it? And how do you address it with them in those
situations? Yeah, so, right, like, everything has consequences, right? Like, mistakes are going to happen, right? Mistakes are going to happen. A guy's going to jump off sides. Like, we're not naive to that fact. But it has consequences, right? In a game, it's 5 yards, right? A big deal where we are in the field in a 2-minute drill, especially like it happened today. It's like, no, get out, somebody else comes in, right? Like, hey, if we're not holding up to the standard, right, we'll get somebody else in, right, and we'll roll. But there has to be consequences for it, because if you just say, okay, back on the ball, then it just happens over and it's inevitably becomes a bad habit and guys don't focus. It's like, no, it's not okay, right? You're out for a play, somebody else is in, right? There's consequences to it, just like it's 5 yards in a game. So just trying to instill that, like, no, we don't want to build that habit. We know it's going to happen, but when it does, there's a consequence. Next play, all right, now you're back in, right? But it's like, hey, it kind of puts you, because now not only do you feel like, oh, man, you're mad at yourself, but like you feel like you're letting your teammates, which it should feel like that, right? So it's the consequence of, all right, now I'm not going to do that again. You know, so that's what we're trying to build when we do that.
So with Trevor, you know, we've heard a lot about, you know, Colin was just saying he thought the move to guard was the best thing he could have done. What is it about his game that you feel like does work at guard?
Sure, less space for him, you know, having a center and a tackle next to him, you know, like he's strongest when he gets on guys fast, right? You know, that's kind of his game. And I remember him, I wasn't here when they drafted him, but I remember evaluating him when he was coming out. And like, we won't say I necessarily saw him at guard, but like his strengths to me were like, man, when he gets his hands on guys, that's when he wins, right? And he can move people, he's strong, he's big. So it's like kind of moving him there, we're kind of asking him to do the stuff he's good at, more so than at a tackle where there's a little more space, where he's not on a guy as early as he is inside a guard, if that makes sense. So that was the thought process behind it. And, you know, we're working towards it. It's still a little new for him, but it's good. It's kind of like when he gets in there, it's like, oh, I can get this sooner, right? And so you can kind of see the light bulb starting to turn on a little bit for him as we go, and we got to keep building.
And what struck me when I talked to him during, I don't know, OTAs, minicamp, whatever it was, is, you know, a lot of times you move somebody's position, they might not be a fan of it. They might do it because they're professional, but it might not always be, you know, something they were thrilled about. Yeah. He seems excited about it. It seemed like he really embraced it. Is that, have you experienced the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. He was very excited about it. You know, because when we talked about it, kind of just what I explained to you is kind of what what I had that conversation with him and Kellen with him, and we're like, man, we think this plays to what you do well, and he's very excited about it. The biggest thing I think for him is, you know, most of his career he's played in a left-handed stance. It's kind of a big deal if you've only been a left-handed stance. Like, it's bigger than a lot of people think sometimes. So getting him back in a left-handed stance, putting some bumpers around him, giving him less space, and let him go do what he does well. And you know, he is genuinely really excited about it. He's been doing a good job building here as we go.
Just one more question. Yeah. You know, the RPO game is a much bigger element to Kellen's offense than what we've seen in the past.
Sure.
Can you just break down, okay, what are some of the challenges for the offensive line in that play? Because I think a lot of people just watch the quarterback and like, oh, he can run or he can pass. But that requires the offensive line to be looking forward and figuring out what's going on behind him, not get too far downfield.
There's, without getting too much into the nitty gritty, there's just a little bit different technique that we use up front, you know, because obviously we can't go downfield, right? The refs now, with more and more teams doing it, they're hyper aware to it. it. You know, so we've kind of adjusted kind of how we coach some things technique-wise when we call those plays. It's still physical. It's still that. It's just a little bit of a mentality of how and when we can get to the second level. You know, we just kind of have a different kind of set of rules, if you will, of when we can come off combinations to the second level when we're running those type plays to make sure we're not downfield. But it's still physical up front. It's still physical on the line of scrimmage because that's all legal. And then we just kind of tweak. When we call those plays, they just kind of go, okay. They have a different kind of little set of rules for coming off on the second level, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll add one more.
Yep.
You know, just coming back, you know, yeah. why did you feel like that was a good move at this point in your career? Were you excited to come back?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of went into that?
Very excited to come back. You know, obviously I was here for 7 years. It's the longest I've been anywhere in the 21, 22 years, whatever it's been in this business. My youngest two kids were born here. My family loves it here. I love it here. So that was a big factor and exciting. I know this organization. I know that it's run well. I know all the things. You know, you kind of been other places and you see different things, and it's like coming back to something you know they're going to do everything for you to be successful, all those things. And then probably the biggest thing for me is I believe in Kellen. You know, I believe how he builds it, how he's going to, you know, how we're going to build this thing together, having been with him. And, you know, he and I were in touch a lot last year when I was in Seattle and he was in Philly. And, you know, I'm just a believer in how he sees it, how he wants to go about it, and how we can get this thing going back to, you know, what it was when I was here last time. So very excited to be back.
Yeah, and you know the fans are always going to be willing to sit out in 100 degrees to watch practice.
That's it's wild. I always question. I swear, I was joking with some of the new guys here. I was like, does anybody work down here?
Right.
Like, what is it, Wednesday afternoon? I'm looking out in the stands. I'm like, holy cow, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's
but it's awesome. That's why fans for Fnatic. I love it.
Right. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, good stuff with Brendan Nugent there. And like you said, back with the black and gold was with the team initially 2015 to 2021, then spent two seasons with the Chargers and last season out in Seattle.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, Eric McCoy was excited to get Brendan Nugent back. Like, it's an interesting staff because you have a lot of new faces, but then you brought back Nugent, you brought back Joel Thomas.
Right.
So there is familiarity with some of these veteran players who worked with Nugent before, and obviously, yeah, he worked with Kellen Moore out in L.A., and you heard him say, like, one of the reasons he wanted to come here is because he believes in Kellen.
Love hearing that.
And I think that's a pretty common thing. Like, when you go around the locker room, like, there's a lot of belief in what he's building, and you know, I think he's pressing the right buttons. And I like Nugent. I was disappointed to see him leave. I thought he really did a good job with that offensive line. They've kind of just run through a stable of guys, and Doug Marrone and John Benton last year, I thought did a good job. He's more of a teacher, and I think that's with this group, and Deuce kind of talked about this the other day. With this coaching staff, there's really an emphasis on development, on teaching, and you need that because it's a young group. You got young quarterbacks, you got young offensive linemen, you got young defensive backs, right? Other than the safeties, it's a very young group. And so you need coaches that are going to show up and teach, not necessarily just kind of hand people the game plan and say, figure it out. And that's a change, right? Like, in the end of the Sean Payton era, a lot of this was on the veterans to handle things on their own, and you had the players that you trusted to do that. You weren't giving significant roles to young players. That's not something you can say now.
Sorry to any Doug Marrone fans out there, but I am not was happy to see him leave the Saints.
Did not think he handled that room particularly well.
So, no, that definitely did not help any kind of development with Trevor Penning, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was probably the ugliest bit of the Doug Marrone OL coach era. It was the Trevor Penning getting benched 2 years ago when he was starting at left tackle. And yeah, he worked with the veteran players. Streif, when he was here, worked with the younger players. And I just don't think he handled the younger players particularly well.
I agree with you there, Jeff. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We're going to get back more of our WWL Sound Bank, so stay tuned right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat?
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Just like the Savannah Bananas, Jeff and I had a little dance breakdown during the commercial break here back on Sports Talk as we get back into our WWL
Come back
sound
to me
bag.
When you can do a backflip and still catch
and make
the ball.
A catch. That was impressive. I'll give him that, even though I'm not a fan of basketball, basically what's going on here.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a good reference. It's a good reference. I'll give it to you.
The WWL Sound Bank brought to you by First American Bank. Going to get into tight end Jack Stahl, what he had to say recently at practice, and a guy that's had a little bit of a bigger role right now because Juwan Johnson's dealing with an injury. But I feel like, Jeff, even before that, we were seeing him be a little more of a receiving presence than I thought he would be in this offense.
Yeah, it's because there's no one else to throw to. I mean, it's like you can't have Juwan take all the reps. And I think it's just like Jack is not here to be a receiving threat. He's here to be a blocker.
Right.
Obviously he can go out and catch a ball, but I think your hope is that you're going to have a better receiving option than Jack. No disrespect to Jack. I think Jack's a good football player. I just think the tight end depth is a concern for me right
for
now.
For sure. And Stahl was asked, we'll get into our first cut here, how he feels this offense is developing.
It's been awesome. You know, you can see Kellen go out there and make this offense his own. And it's been proven on tape that his offense, you know, is a phenomenal offense when executed correctly. So, you know, right now we're really just taking the time to, you know, figure out how to run the offense correctly, get all those minor details figured out. And like I said, it's been cool every day seeing us take a couple steps where, you know, day one, we're a little sloppy here and there. And then, you know, by now it's like, oh, we got this tightened up, we got that tightened up. So it's been awesome seeing the growth of what we can do with this offense. And I think right now we're just on a trajectory up, and I'm looking forward to seeing where we can get to.
Stahl's also one of those guys that defected from the Philadelphia Eagles, joining Kellen Moore here in New Orleans, spent the first 4 years of his career in Philly, and now a member of the Black and Gold, was part of that run game with Saquon Barkley a year ago in Philly. And he was asked about what's exciting about the Saints' run scheme this year.
I think it's just the style of play. I mean, you can go out there and just put hat on a hat and just play good old physical football. And that's one of the best things about this offense is it lets you be one-on-one, go out there, and, you know, as long as you take care of your guy, the play's going to hit. So, I mean, it's, you know, as you can tell from the tape, it's hard-nosed football. And, you know, that's what we love, and it's a great way to set the tone on offense.
Stahl, a big dude, 6'4", 247 pounds. Definitely going to use him, like you mentioned, in this blocking game. And, you know, that's something that you're going to need to have that help for this O-line that is still, I feel like, learning each other and developing.
No, the blocking tight end, you know, I kind of talked down like, oh, the blocking tight end. But, like, you need that guy.
Sure.
You know, like Josh Hill, there's a reason Josh Hill was here forever. And, you know, there's a few other guys who filled that role over the years, but
you mentioning that just now just made me think about what you wanted to talk about, too. We'll get to eventually the undervalued Saints.
Yeah, we're running out of time, but
yeah, for sure.
No, yeah, we'll get to that at some point. But no, I mean, like, you need that guy. You need those dirty work players. There's no fullback on this roster. You need someone to get in there and block for the running backs. And I think Jack Stahl is going to be that guy.
You mentioned no fullback on the roster. Well, Stahl was asked, would you be up for snaps at the fullback position?
Listen, if they want me on the field, I'll do whatever they tell me to do. But, you know, I think specifically Kellen's offense and TJ Pagnetti, I think they do a phenomenal job of, you know, doing what a fullback would do out of 12 personnel. And so I think that they've kind of been able to morph the offense into something where you can run similar plays that you would with, you know, traditional fullback with an F tight end. So, you know, the F tight end, some of these plays does go out there and do the job of fullback is leading up, doing stuff like that. So, you know, I'm completely open to it, but I don't know if we'll do it. But if we are, hey, I'm all in for it.
Jack Stahl, Saints tight end there. And we'll be seeing more of him, like I said, with Juwan Johnson currently down dealing with a minor groin issue, although it seems a little silly to say minor with a groin injury, but we saw him thankfully been at practice in a limited fashion right now. He hasn't been MIA, which is always like, well, what's going on with the player? So, like, I feel like Sean Payton always used to say, sooner rather than later, I expect we get Juwan Johnson back in the mix for this team. But for now, at least, Jack Stahl is your tight end one dealing with, you know, the injuries there, also with Taysom Hill and still with Foster Moreau out the mix with this squad as well.
Yeah, I think if Juwan was dealing with anything significant, you wouldn't have had him out there yesterday. You would be, you know, you'd have him in rehab work. So I think you're going to see him back. The question is, when does he get back in the team? But, you know, he was doing individual work yesterday, so I don't think it's going to be particularly long. But yeah, the bigger question at this point is Foster Moreau. Taysom, I don't think you're really that close on. But Foster, I'd like to think you can get him back into practice prior to the end of camp. I don't know if that's going to be true for Taysom. And if you can do that and you can at least get him into the system, I think that would be very helpful for how this team and offense operates early in the season.
And we did see the Saints end up kicking the tires on a guy like Noah Fant, who ended up choosing to sign with the Cincinnati Bengals. We don't know if the Saints offered him anything.
No, they did have a visit with him,
right.
But it never really made sense. If I'm Noah Fant, I want to go to a team that you know, I don't want to come in somewhere and back up Juwan Johnson. That's just what would have been. And then also, like, you know, if veteran players typically want to sign somewhere where there's a lot of optimism around the offense. And I just don't know if that exists for the Saints right now, at least not externally. So, yeah, I didn't think that was going to happen. But, I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to look at veteran options on the free agent market.
Heading out to break right now. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. We believe in the power of being everywhere. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. That's Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell Scoo, and Sports Talk. And the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. One last segment here on Sports Talk before we wrap things up, getting ready for back-to-back outside practices over the weekend at Saints training camp. And Jeff, I know you wanted to bring up something about the wide receiver room.
Yeah, well, we got Jeff on the causeway. He's probably not on the causeway anymore. His text came in a little while ago. He's probably well off the causeway. I don't know where he's I don't know which direction he's heading on the causeway, but he's on the causeway.
So many Jeffs lately.
A lot of Jeffs. And I do feel some level of kinship with Jeff on the causeway. So he wanted to talk about the receivers, and he's concerned that the combined weight of these receivers when you'd like drench them in water is like 325 pounds. That's probably not true. I think Rashid is up to 190. Chris, I think, is about 180. So it was like, yeah, you're shortchanging him about 30, 35 pounds. But no, I mean, the Saints, even with Rashid being a more physical receiver, definitely is not ever going to be confused with a big, bulky guy.
Right.
Right? So there is a level of concern. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to be careful with how you use these guys. Right? Like, you're going to have to find ways to get them in space. I don't want them being laid out to dry hung out to dry over the middle of the field. Right? Especially Chris Olave. So I don't know. Like, you're going to have to figure it out. I'm not super concerned from Rashid's perspective. Like, his injury was not a durability thing. It was just, you know, knee injuries happen. It was kind of an innocuous play. Like, it wasn't like he got hit really hard and blew out his knee. It just, you know, sometimes your knee just goes. Chris is obviously a different type of injury, but even then, it's a very specific injury, right? Like, it's not about being big. He could weigh 20 more pounds. If he gets hit in the head, he's still going to get a concussion. So I don't know. Like, I think the big physical receiver thing gets a little overplayed in the modern NFL, where you're not really allowed to hit guys the way you used to, right? Like, defenseless receiver penalties are a thing. So I don't know. Like, I feel good about this receiver room. I like this receiver tandem. I would like to see a Terry McLaurin, you know, like a player like that in that group. I think you would be better off for it. But I don't think you're going to be watching the team this year and being like, the reason they're losing is because they don't have a big physical receiver. I think you're going to get a healthy season from Shaheed if Olave can stay, you know, keep his head on his shoulders. You know, I think you're going to get a healthy season from him too. So I don't have as big of a concern about that as I think.
Well, hopefully that big physical guy for you can be Juwan Johnson.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the reasons Juwan is so important, because
yeah,
he's not just your tight end. He's also that guy, the guy you can kind of throw the ball to in traffic and expect him to come fight for it and come down with it. You know, like, Bub Means is a guy that I'd like to step forward, but he just hasn't shown me a ton so far in camp. Hopefully that changes.
Hopefully he's a gamer,
although it didn't work out for A.T. Perry. Like, we tried to give him that title, and then he got cut, so... no, I mean, there's a few other options. Donovan Peoples-Jones has kind of disappeared. Didn't really do much.
Right.
And
I know Kellen, he also mentioned earlier, maybe OTAs, that one of those contested catch guys could be Cedric Wilson Jr.
Yeah, and the problem is every contested catch, it doesn't seem like he catches it. like both interceptions yesterday were targeting Cedric Wilson. But no, he's a big physical guy. Kellen likes him. Kellen's familiar with him. So right now, I think he would be that guy. But I still think that's kind of a wide open spot for someone to be like, hey, I want to be this big physical receiver that you kind of need, and I'm going to put forth performances that win that spot. Right now, it's kind of just, okay, no one's really stepping forward into it.
That's a wrap on today's show. For Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, I'm Steve Geller. We'll be back at practice tomorrow and Sunday. Stay tuned on Monday for the Cajun Cannons Notebook. Have a great night, everybody. Enjoy the weekend.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture.
From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians,
follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.